Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551, wash your hands. I mentioned yesterday on the programme this article in the Irish Times by the medic Dr. Chris Fitzpatrick. He's a gynaecologist working in the Coombe, sometimes poet, but a contributor to many debates. But he's a consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist in the Coombe, former master, and he's a clinical prof in UCD's School of Medicine, which is where he begins, because he's saying that the centenary of the execution of Kevin Barry, just a lad of 18 summers, in Mountjoy Prison is coming up on November the 1st. And he's arguing that Kevin Barry should not be remembered as a hero because he believes that medical students should not be involved in violence. If they do take up a cause, it should be as a medic in the army rather than a combatant. He says... Three British soldiers were killed in that ambush. Their deaths didn't upset me then, only Kevin Barry's did. Like Kevin Barry, I went to medical school in UCD. I also had the privilege of teaching med students. When I started in pre-med, Kevin Barry was no longer a hero for me. Throughout the 70s, I seen what guns and religion were doing up north. And he goes on to say that... again, that central point is that medics should not be involved in killing people, basically. And that's his point. Now, we were contacted by Shifra O'Donovan. Shifra, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thanks. You're a grandniece of Kevin Barry, the author of the recently published Yours Till Hell Freezes, a memoir of Kevin Barry. You're a grandniece. What do you think of what the medic is arguing, that he shouldn't be commemorated because a medic or a medical student should not have been killing people?
Well, I think I can certainly see where the Chris Fitzpatrick, where he veered away, and he felt a very large distaste for violence because of what happened in the north. And an awful lot of people feel that, and it's completely understandable. However, I think what we really need to remember is that Kevin Barry was in an army. He was an IRA volunteer. He was in company. And he was completely accountable to Dáil Éireann. And he'd taken an oath to the Dáil when it was founded on the 19th of January in 1919. Yeah. So that army was completely accountable to a democratic government. And they were at war at the time with the British Army and with the British administration, who had been here for a very long time. And this was a war, and it was, as we know, the War of Independence. So I know that Mr. Fitzpatrick was, you know, saying that the three young privates were killed, and they were in the Lancashire Fusilier, and they were in the lorry which arrived at the scene of the crime in the Monk's Bakery on the 20th of September 1920, and that they lost their lives. And yes, of course, that is a tragedy, absolutely. And one of them was even younger. I think Washington was even younger.
15. Harold Washington, Marshall Whitehead, Thomas Humphreys, aged, I think, 15, 17 and 19. They were in the convoy that went to Monk's Bakery. I grew up on this story because my granny, long deceased, Agnes Duffy of 89 Church Street, she told me she was there when it happened. She would have been about 12. They were collecting bread from Monk's Bakery for the nearby Linen Hall barracks, and there was an ambush on the British Army lorry, so to speak. And Kevin Barry hid. There was a gun battle. Three British soldiers were shot. Kevin Barry hid under the truck. And the truck was about to pull away. And then some woman shouted. Now, I don't think it was my granny now, but someone shouted.
It wasn't your granny.
Someone shouted in all innocence, "Oh, for God's sake, mind the young fellow under the truck." And that's how Kevin Barry was captured.
That is exactly.
And whoever shouted those words apparently was vilified for the rest of her life in Church Street. But anyway,
no, that's a myth. She wasn't
vilified. Yeah. Very good. That's good. But anyway, my granny says she was there outside Monk's Bakery. But Harold Washington, Marshall Whitehead, and Thomas Humphreys. Do you believe, for example, when the commemoration takes place of Kevin Barry's execution in Mountjoy Jail by the British? I presume the British obviously implemented at the time, but it was a big campaign against the execution. But do you believe those three young fellas, Harold Washington, Marshall Whitehead and Thomas Humphreys, should be commemorated as well?
I don't think there's any country in the world that would commemorate the loss of life on the other side. I don't think I've ever heard of that. I think it's a really interesting idea. But I don't think that the British would commemorate or involve Irish fighters in their commemoration services at all. So I don't see that it would be something that would be appropriate, not to say that we can't honour those lives and feel, you know, sympathy for the mothers of those young men who were so young as well, absolutely. But in terms of our sense of nationhood, in terms of our understanding of how we got independence, how we are an independent country, and those young men like Kevin Barry and Frank Flood were at war. And I do know because I've read in
But the point that Chris, I take that point, but the point that Chris... Yeah. Chris Fitzpatrick is specifically making is in the annals of medical history, it is rare to come across a medical student who sets out to kill another person. Even in war, you expect medics to look after the wounded, not shoot people dead. That's how I felt in pre-med. I still feel the same.
Well, there were lots of people from different there were lots of students and there were lots.
Yeah, but he's saying medical
professional practices.
But this is his point, Shifra. This is the unique point of Chris Fitzpatrick's article.
Yeah, sure.
He's writing as a medic who went to UCD, like Kevin Barry, and he's saying, I cannot agree with commemorating a medic who killed people, who advocated, I don't know if Kevin Barry ever killed anyone, but he was so young, but advocated
there were other medical students who were involved in the different companies of the RA volunteers as well, so it wasn't really that unusual. As I said, there were people of other professions as well. But I do understand
the point. Okay. Shifra. Joe at RT.ie is a simple email from anywhere, including Liverpool, where Paddy Crean has contacted us from. Paddy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You agree entirely with Chris Fitzpatrick's article?
I do.
Why?
Well, precisely for the points that you were making, that a medic is there to save life, not to take it. I wouldn't have objected to Kevin Barry being a medic in the IRA. I mean, my father was a medic in Michael Collins' army at one stage, but he was there to save life. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, also, regarding Shifra's comment, the War of Independence was absolutely necessary. It would have taken far, far longer to have achieved independence, as the Provost of Trinity said in a talk in Milltown Park in the 70s. It would have happened, but it would have happened maybe 50, 60 years down the line. Mm-hmm. So I don't object to the War of Independence at all.
And what do you think of commemorating Kevin Barry?
I'm not sure. I think one should commemorate the war, as we did in 2016, but not individuals. And the whole point about Kevin Barry was he was a very courageous young man, extremely courageous. But as a medic, he should have been a medic in the IRA, not a soldier or volunteer.
Shifra, do you want to come back before...
I'd just like to say one thing, yeah. I think you have to remember that Kevin Barry was a first-year student in UCD. Mm-hmm. He was not a qualified doctor. He would not have been qualified to be a medic and to help people who were injured or sick during the war. So that does need to be remembered. If you read my book, you'll see that he was a very gregarious young man. He was very sociable, and he also failed his first-year medical exams, and he was about to do his resits the very day of the ambush. He was supposed to do it at 2 o'clock, but the ambush happened in the morning, and fate took its toll, and Kevin was seen by Mrs. Garrett underneath the lorry. And the rest we know. Well, some of us know.
Yeah, well, he was executed.
What happened to him.
Which,
but he wasn't a qualified medic, so really, I don't think that argument can stand up.
Okay, let me go to Lorcan Collins, who's a well-known historian, dubbed 1916 walking tour from the International Bar there, just off South William Street, and the Revolutionary Ireland podcast. Lorcan, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe.
Are you party to any commemoration? I know you've produced a medal, a coin.
Yeah, we just got a little coin together to raise a few bob for Brother Kevin there on Church Street. No, I just did 100 commemorative ones. But
And a Kevin Barry.
They're all sold anyway. So Kevin Barry. I think he's a great hero. I mean, I think he's an incredible young man. I think what people are missing as well is what was going on at the time in Ireland. You know, a few days before Kevin Barry was executed, Terence McSweeney died in Brixton Prison after a 74-day hunger strike. The day that Kevin and his pals in the IRA attacked the British at Monk's Bakery, later on that evening, the Black and Tans and the British Army sacked Balbriggan. So people are missing the fact that in Kerry, in Tralee, on the 1st of November 1920, the day Kevin Barry was executed, there began 9 days of reprisals against a town in Ireland by British forces. And to take Kevin Barry's death singularly is obviously wrong. We have to look at what was going on in Ireland.
Lorcan, did you read Chris Fitzpatrick's article and where he's coming from, the medical angle?
Yeah, like, look,
what did you think of the article?
It's an opinion piece. There's no argument in there. It's not history. It's just a poorly thought out opinion. He's the kind of guy I end up sitting beside at a dinner party who I think sits beside me just to wind me up, you know. And I try to not get wound up by such people, but there's no real argument there.
What about Harold Washington, Marshall Whitehead and Thomas Humphreys?
Well, I would argue that it's the blood of Harold Washington and Whitehead and Humphreys is on Winston Churchill's hand. How did a 15-year-old boy end up in the British Army? He wasn't conscripted. He joined up when there was a war in Ireland. Now, the British Army were inclined to turn a blind eye during World War One to the age of these guys.
Including many Irish people.
For sure,
yeah,
for sure.
Dubliners.
Listen,
and,
Joe, yeah. 1 in 5 who went to the war in Europe didn't return. Mm-hmm. 1 in 10 in the British Army who were English didn't return. The Irish were massacred in World War One from both traditions, from Unionists, Loyalist and nationalist, but I would say it would be ridiculous.
There was no conscription in Ireland. I know that you're making the difference between conscription. There was no conscription in Ireland as we knew it then. So a lot of the people who signed up for the British Army, it was after 1913, the strike, the unemployment. They joined for the few bob, as you know, Lorcan.
Correct. I have never said anything bad about men who joined the British Army from Ireland. However, that was their choice, but mostly it was an economic choice. James Connolly called it conscription by starvation. However, if we start commemorating individuals like Whitehead, Humphreys and Washington, what's next? Do we commemorate Oswald Swansea, the man who killed Tomás McCurtain, the legitimate mayor of Cork City? Do we put up a plaque to him? Do we put up a plaque to the Black and Tans? Do we put up 21 days after Kevin Barry was executed, the British forces charged into a football match and killed 14 people? This is what was going on in Ireland at the time, in Bloody Sunday.
And then, Lorcan, what do you think of the fact that I presumed Harold Washington, Marshall Whitehead and Thomas Humphreys will be, along with Kevin Barry, though Kevin will be after them because it's chronological, I presume their names will be engraved on the wall in Glasnevin.
Well, I can't speak for Glasnevin, so I don't know whether...
Well, if it's a follow precedent.
Yeah, I mean, the precedent was set in 1916, but I'm not sure. I can't speak for Glasnevin. I don't know whether that's actually happening, Joe. Someone from Glasnevin will have to say
we'll
that.
We'll find out. My understanding was that it would happen.
That was the initial plan. But I don't see it at the moment. I mean, if it was happening, I suppose it should have started in 1919, as Shifra says, when the war began. And Shifra makes a very important point there. The IRA swore allegiance to Dáil Éireann on the 20th of August 1919. So they were considered the legitimate army of Ireland at the time. And it's ridiculous not to recognise Dáil Éireann from 1919. Everybody does. And then not
this was the Dáil. This was the Dáil on the run that met in three Mountjoy Square, among other places. Okay, Larkin, stay there. Let's listen to a clip of people who were participants in the attack, believe it or not. This was a clip from 1970 from Newsbeat, and the reporter is the legendary Cathal O'Shannon, whose father had a great background in revolutionary politics as well, like yourself, Larkin. And this is Cathal O'Shannon. He speaks to a number of participants in the attack in September 1920 outside Monk's Bakery, which is now a pub, I think, at the bottom of Church Street there at the junction. And in the clip you'll hear, I think the pub was called Kevin Barry. Yes, in the clip you'll hear Tucker O'Reilly, who was only 22 at the time, describe what happened on the day.
The captain got orders from headquarters that there was to be no shoot, if possible. But this soldier in the lorry, when they sold the main body of the military, were had the tailboard down, and they were all standing at the back of the car. Except one soldier that was sitting down on a biscuit box inside in the lorry. But these fellas at the back were covering them up. And he happened his rifle beside him on the ground. And he picked up, he was picking up his rifle when the lieutenant fired at him. And of course the shot went off, and the lieutenant, he got a wound, a ricochet or a wound or a slit pulling across the forehead.
So at that stage you all started shooting?
Well, I didn't shoot for a while, you see. But when it was getting too hot, I started to fire at the driver, so that the lorry wouldn't move.
Did you hit the driver?
Well, no, I can't tell you that. You see. I couldn't tell you. When you fired a bullet out of a gun, you don't know where it's going to land.
Okay, there's Tucker O'Reilly. He was, it's incredible. As I say, my granny was there on the day as a 12-year-old. So it's relatively recent history. Alan Barry, stay with us, Larkin and Shifra. Alan Barry is a former British soldier born in Dublin, has contacts as well. Alan, what do you think of what Dr. Chris Fitzpatrick is saying, which is that Kevin Barry, as a medical student, should not have been killing people? It's rare in the annals of medical history to come across a medical student who sets out to kill another person. Even in war, you expect medics to look after the wounded, not shoot people dead. That's why he doesn't want Kevin Barry commemorated the week after next, on the day he was executed. Alan?
It's a matter of personal principle, isn't it? I don't necessarily agree with him. I think that if you have a view, if you have a passion, mm-hmm. if you believe in something and a cause, and I have no opinion on what he believed in, might share the same name, but that's about all we share. But I don't necessarily agree with the doctor on that. I think that who knows what happened that day. The fact he was hiding under a lorry mm-hmm. Would indicate that probably... He wasn't the hero that people would like him make out that he is. It was a soft target. Young soldiers going down to a bakery to pick up bread, they're not going to believe that they're going to be in an ambush. So it's a soft target, and it's just classic guerrilla warfare.
In fairness, they were armed, Alan.
Well, of course they were armed.
They weren't going on a play date.
But you've only got to listen to the chap who was there at the time. The one guy was sitting down on a biscuit box, and the other guy's lorry, his rifle was down beside him. They weren't out on patrol. They weren't actively mm-hmm. looking for it wasn't like they were out on point, patrolling through a Western Front trench, or, you know, as they would have been in 1916, knowing that the whole city of Dublin was up in arms. So therefore, bullets could have been coming from anywhere. These were just young boy soldiers. I mean, the bit about Winston Churchill having blood on his hands, I mean, they were young men who wanted to join the army. They didn't have an opinion on whether Ireland should be a united Ireland or independent or anything. They were just young guys coming from probably very impoverished backgrounds in the UK who wanted to join the army and see the world.
Well, do we know anything about the three soldiers that were killed on that day? Harold Washington.
Go out to Grange Gorman, there's 216.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Or 217 or something, other young soldiers that were killed.
But do we know anything about the three that were killed on that day? Whose anniversary was...
All I know is that they were younger, two of them were younger than Kevin Barry. So, you know, let's be honest about Kevin Barry. You know, it's Irish folklore. It's another song to be sung on a rebel-filled night in a bar or whatever. There's plenty of other songs about other you know, heroes of the revolution. There's nothing special about Kevin Barry, and I'm sorry if that offends, but that's the reality. It's just he was 18 years of age. But what about the two lads that were younger than him? Kevin Barry made a decision to become an Irish volunteer. Those two young lads made a decision to become British soldiers. So if you're not going to commemorate them, then why commemorate Kevin Barry?
Lorcan, that point that Alan makes, there's nothing special about Kevin Barry.
Well, Alan, fair enough, you make that point, but I wholeheartedly disagree with you. The guy is an absolutely incredibly dedicated revolutionary. When you read his last letter, he says things like, "It is nothing to give one's life for Ireland." As a soldier of the Irish Republic, he told everyone to hold on and stick to the Republic. He had a message there, you know. It's such a sad letter as well. "I have always felt lucky to have such a crowd of pals. The one thing that makes it harder to go." You know, part and parcel of his story is that John Ellis, who was the hangman, by the way, who also executed Roger Casement and Dr. Crippen and about 200 other people, it's part of 1916 in some ways, because he's the first person to be executed since the 16 men were executed after the Easter Rising, you know, 14 in Kilmainham Jail and Thomas Kent down in Cork and Casement in England. But we have to take it all as part of one story. Barry was too young to join in 1916. He wanted to join the Fianna, but his mother actually wouldn't let him do that. But he did join the Volunteers, and Shiafra will probably back me up on this. I think he was 15 when he joined. And soon after that, he joined the Irish Republican Brotherhood. So to us, he encompasses all that is great and good in those men and women who were brave enough to fight against British imperialism in Ireland. And this constant harping on about whether doctors fight. Che Guevara was a doctor. Kathleen Lynn fought in 1916. She was a surgeon. There's a fellow called Solomon Gluck.
Well, did Kathleen Lynn actually take up arms, Lorcan?
Well, she, you know,
was she not,
that
more,
I'm
she
aware
not more a medic in 1916?
She was a medic, but she was.
But did she not act as a medic? That's what I'm saying. I know. By the way, I take Schieffer's point that she was a qualified medic by 1916, long qualified, and had a history in Dublin of running clinics and hospitals. But I don't know if Kathleen Lynn actually took up a Mauser,
well,
did she?
No, but she was out with the revolutionaries, you know. She was a revolutionary out there with them. Yeah, whether she used her weapon or not, I'm not sure. Probably not. Solomon Gluck and all those great young men in the French resistance who fought against, who literally fought against the Nazis. Are we to say that they shouldn't be commemorated?
Okay.
Because they were medics.
Okay, Alan, do you believe that the three British soldiers should be commemorated at the same time as Kevin Barry?
Well, that's never going to happen, is it?
No, because, I'm asking, do you think they should?
No, I, to be honest, I think, you know, I think we just all need to move on there. You know, and look, the RIC commemorations were put on hold, where the opposition to that was absolutely outrageous. It wasn't commemoration of the Black and Tans, it was commemoration of Royal Irish Constabulary, you know. And if you can't commemorate an unarmed police officer who was shot dead at the gates of Dublin Castle when he wouldn't let the rebels in, he said, "No, you're not coming in," and they shot him basically point-blank range. If you can't commemorate that brave man, then with all due respect, why should Kevin Barry be commemorated? Because the bravery that police officer showed that day, he was an Irishman, he was from Limerick. He was unarmed, standing at the gates of Dublin Castle, said, "You're not coming in. bang, they shot him dead. So if you can't commemorate that man, let's not commemorate anyone and let's all just move on.
OK, Pa Daly's a Sinn Féin TD for Kerry. Pa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And you say your granny was there on George Street as well.
Yeah, well, my great-grandmother, yeah.
Your great-grandmother, OK.
She was from, she was living at the time, I think, at North Circular Road, number 4 North Circular Road.
Okay.
And she was doing her shopping that day in Church Street also. And we had that story in the family that she was there, exactly what you said, that she was doing her shopping and someone saw the young fella under the van after the raid. And so she had seen it. You know, and it's interesting the point that was made earlier on by Lorcan, I think it was, about Tralee, and the siege of Tralee did start for about 8 days after that, which was reported widely around the world, where the town was put into lockdown, curfews, houses of people who were seen to be Republican sympathisers, they were shot up, people were imprisoned. And, you know, the other incidents happened around the country by, and that was carried out by, you know, the Black and Tans or the auxiliary forces at the time.
And so, what do you think of the argument? What, first of all, Pa, what do you think of Dr. Chris Fitzpatrick's argument, former master of the Coombe, that a medic should not have been involved in killing people?
Yeah, well, I was going to make the point about Che Guevara as well, but plenty of doctors over the years have, you know, given assistance in their own way, you know, to people who couldn't go to, let's say, ordinary hospitals and treated people. And, you know, Kevin Barry was, you know, a medical student in his first year, I think. So, you know, he signed up. I don't take that point at all. He wasn't a qualified medic.
And what do you think of Alan Barry's point, Pa, that the three British soldiers should be commemorated on this, at the same time, if you're going to commemorate Kevin Barry?
Yeah, no, I think that's half a wind-up, really. Is it plausible for on Independence Day in America that they're going to commemorate the British who were fighting against independence in America? I don't think that is. You know, the British are very good at commemorating their soldiers, and let them do that, and let people here commemorate as they will. They are in Tralee, there's an estate in Tralee, Kevin Barry Villas, and the residents down there, I understand, are having a commemoration.
Can I ask a question of the Sinn Féin councillor?
Alan Barry, he's a TD, yeah. Alan. Go ahead,
TD,
go ahead, Alan.
Sinn Féin TD. Do you not think the RIC, Irishman from Limerick, who joined the police, not the Black and Tans, what do you think? Do you not think he should have been commemorated?
Well, the argument that went on in the early part of this year, which was being pushed by the former Minister for Justice, was that the Black and Tans, who bolstered up the when Irish people started leaving the RIC in droves, when the War of Independence started, and following the death of Thomas Ashe, and in the aftermath of the Rising. It was bolstered up by auxiliary forces and Black and Tans. And the argument was at the time that everybody should be commemorated. I don't agree with that. I don't think that people who, in my town and in my county, who were an occupying force and who carried out atrocities, that they should be commemorated by an Irish state, no matter how colonial were after all getting, you know.
What was the second city of the British Isles back in 1920?
Well, there had been an election in 1918. The result of the democratic election at that time, after that, in January of 1919, the Dáil Éireann was established in the Mansion House. And we had a democratically elected government, which was formed. And the IRA, in which Kevin Barry was a volunteer, was fighting on behalf of that democratically elected government.
Okay, so a classic answer there from a politician. So basically, you know, the second city of the British Isles at the time was Dublin. Well, London was the capital, Dublin was the second city.
Well,
so
are you saying that the...
Forces?
Okay. Well, is this Mr. Barry, is it?
Alan Barry, yeah.
Alan, are you saying that the government wasn't legitimate, that Dáil Éireann wasn't legitimate?
Am I saying that? I don't... What I'm saying is that the biggest mistake ever that was made by the British in 1916 was by shooting the leaders of the revolution. There was a First World War going on at the time.
So I presume then, Alan, you don't agree with the execution then of Kevin Barry by the state.
No, I don't. I think all it did was fuel further anger. That same way, let's not forget, the leaders of the 1916 uprising were jeered in the streets as they were marched away. And then actually wasn't the British government, it was that general, I can't think of his name at the time.
Mike Macready.
He basically ordered them to be executed. Biggest mistake they ever made.
Could I come in on that, Joe?
Yeah,
If you read Joe Lee's book, another great Tralee man, by the way, his book of Irish history, a lot of the reaction by the people on the streets of Dublin at the time was tailored by the reports in the media, some of which newspapers are still operating, and that they were very, very anti the leaders. So they were being informed. But within days or within a couple of weeks, the support had completely changed around. So just because a few people did jeer at the time,
if that is correct,
They were informed by what was going on in the papers at that time.
Okay,
what was the more informed decision came about, the reaction within a short space of time was in favour and supportive of the leaders of 1916.
So, Pa, you accept that the Dáil Éireann of 1919 is a legitimate legitimate government of Ireland?
Absolutely, yeah.
And you always accepted that even when Sinn Féin didn't?
What's that?
You always accepted that even when Sinn Féin didn't.
Well, the election, I accept the election of 1918 and the Dáil that was elected then, of course.
But do you accept that the Free State Government were the inheritors of that Dáil?
That's a different question now, Joe, than what you asked me a minute ago.
Joe, may I come in there?
Larkin, yeah.
Yeah, just remember, the Free State Dáil replaced the original Dáil Éireann. They voted to establish a new Free State Parliament. So when Sinn Féin refused to recognise subsequent Dáils and always referred back to the 1919 Dáil Éireann, their point was that the second, the Free State Dáil had been established under British law. That's the point why Sinn Féin, for many years, refused to recognise
Dáil. Let's listen to another clip, because it is recent history. This is Jimmy Carrington, and he gives his accounts of the events. He was a transport non-commissioned officer on the day in September, 100 years ago, when that attack took place in Church Street in Dublin.
I saw the military lorry pulling up at Monk's Bakery here, and then our men was on the far side of Church Street, the opposite side, and the next was that I heard a shot. Next was I saw Kevin under the lorry where his revolver jammed, and the next was that the troops who was going in to collect the bread run back out of the bakery yard.
That would be just behind us?
Behind you, yes.
So that the lorry that Kevin was under was actually...
We're on the ground.
Where we're standing now?
Yeah, where the lorry is.
We're standing.
We're on the ground, where the lorry was parked.
Did he fire? Did you see him fire a
shot? I couldn't say that, because I don't think he did, insofar that it jammed. And Kevin threw himself under the lorry to try and get rid of the jam, and failed.
When these soldiers came running out of the bakery, was it obvious to you then that the action had failed?
The action was failed. The job was a flop.
And what happened then?
Well, personally, the men cleared off their own direction and we went back to Charles Street with our band.
And Kevin was lying here underneath
his lorry. He was captured.
But did you see him being captured?
No.
Did you see anybody say or shout anything?
Only the old lady shouted, "Oh, look at the poor man under the lorry."
Drawing the attention of the soldiers to Kevin.
Drawing the attention.
Now, suppose she hadn't done that. Had Kevin Barry a chance to escape that
morning? It's been a terrible risk. If he turned around and run for us, as they're saying it, well, they'd have got.
Okay, fascinating stuff. Pa, what do you think, Pa Daly, the Sinn Féin TD for Kerry, whose great-grandmother was there on September 1920 down at Church Street? Because it was a great shopping area, the markets and everything were down there. It was a very busy part of the city. But, Pa, what do you think of the There was the wall in Glasnevin where they put the names of the British soldiers who died in 1916 on the same space, chronologically, obviously, as the members of the Citizen Army and the volunteers who died in 1916. What do you think of that?
Well, Joe, you know, on another side of the family, I had a great-granduncle who died in World War One, and I've been over to his grave, and I've no difficulty saying that. And, you know, he joined up. He had emigrated to New Zealand, and I'm not sure whether he was conscripted or what, but he joined, and he died in the Western Front. And, you know, I have no problem with them being remembered, but officially commemorated in Ireland, giving them the same status as people who fought for our freedom. You know, we should be commemorating people who fought and died for Ireland. But I've no problem with them being commemorated, and being remembered. And in fact, I was at a commemoration for three men who were killed in Castle Island a week before the ceasefire.
At the ceasefire.
Or the truce. At the time, we remembered the British soldier who was killed. He was mentioned in passing. Now, we weren't there to commemorate those soldiers. But, you know, look, there have been wars, there have been more recent wars, and I don't think there's any problem in remembering that, you know, wars are tragic events and wars can get dirty and, you know, they're...
But is there an opportunity to move forward? I'm thinking of the Queen's visit or whatever and the fact that she went to the Garden of Remembrance, the fact that she acknowledged the hurt that the British Empire, so to speak, caused on Ireland. Is there a time where combatants would say we should remember all combatants?
Well, I would say that we can acknowledge them all. We can remember them all, certainly. But, to say that the original argument here is, should Kevin Barry be commemorated? Mm-hmm. And Chris, as Patrick was saying, that he shouldn't. You know, I fundamentally disagree with that.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
He is a folk hero. Everyone has heard the songs. You know, we learned them when we were younger. Okay. The cruel English tortured him. He never shrank nor cried. Sublime as fate, the gallows tree, he faced the day with pride. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that... You know, he was very brave when he was going to be executed. There was a big campaign because he was so young, you know. I think people would have accepted it more if it was an older combatant, but because he was so young, because he was a medical student...
And I think he was the first execution since 1916.
Since 1916.
Okay, Pally, I leave
maybe,
that...
Maybe as Mr. Barry said, Alan said, you know, if the British had dealt with it another way, you know... Some of the troubles that went on after that, certainly the siege of Tralee might have been avoided because there was a reaction in Tralee to what happened in Dublin, and then the siege happened as a reaction to what was happening down here. So, you know, it was a catalogue of events, a chain of events which started with, you know, with Kevin Barry, and before that there was the mayor being killed in Cork, being executed democratically elected mayor.
Yeah. Okay, Larkin, thanks to the Pad Daily Sinn Féin TD for Kerry. Larkin Collins runs the 1916 walking tour. It's still going on with social distancing. Fantastic, especially for schools. He also runs the Revolutionary Ireland podcast, which can be easily got on Spotify or your favourite podcast platform there. I don't know how there's so much knowledge in one man's brain, but there is. He's a fantastic. They're a fantastic podcast. Shifra O'Donovan's book is called Author Yours Till Hell Freezes, a memoir of Kevin Barry, and she's the grandniece of Kevin Barry and Alan Barry. Alan Barry, no relation, was born in Dublin and his parents moved to the UK when he was two and is a former member of the British Army. 1850, 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Paul O'Brien, I think I referenced Paul O'Brien earlier on, a historian. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you keeping?
I think you work for the OPW as well, don't you?
I did.
Brilliant.
I was based up in the Royal Hospital, Kilmainham.
Another great spot. Tell us, Kevin Barry, I know you've written about it and you've looked at the article by Chris Fitzpatrick. What do you think?
In one way, he's right. Kevin Barry... as in all medics, take an oath to save life. But Barry also believed in an independent Ireland as well. So he was actually fighting for that cause at that particular time. And Ireland back then was very different than it is today. So a lot of people would have been mixed up in revolutionary activities at that time.
And what happened, Kevin Barry, on the day?
I think the ambush, as it, the interview said, didn't go well at all. Barry had a gun that jammed, and that's why he hid under the truck. He was trying to clear the blockage. And the gun was loaded, they say, with dum-dum bullets, which is a bullet which is altered, that when it's fired and the bullet enters the body, it explodes and causes horrific wounds. So
were they allowed in war, so to speak? Insofar?
No, they were illegal. And during the First World War and even before that, if you were caught, especially during the Boer War, they were used a lot. If you were caught with them, you were automatically executed.
Okay. Wow.
In the field.
And what about, do you know anything about the woman who inadvertently...
I think what's interesting about that story, I think the woman who mentioned that he was under the truck so he wouldn't get run over, so to speak, many, many years later, I believe, she was killed in an accident where there was a milk lorry.
That went out of control.
The back, and it went out of control. She
I
was
heard
sitting
that story as well, 89. That was, I remember hearing that story as well. Paul, by the way, just on the simple question that Chris Fitzpatrick asked, well, he answered it himself. He doesn't want Kevin Barry commemorated. Should Kevin Barry be commemorated, and should the three British soldiers who were shot in that raid be commemorated here in Ireland?
The British soldiers are always commemorated in England with their Remembrance Day, and that should be enough there. In relation to Barry, yes, he should be commemorated, but also all the other Irish volunteers that took part in the War of Independence, rather than just picking one or two, which is fine to do, but they should all be remembered, and all the actions as well should be remembered. This is our decade of centenary, so definitely that should go ahead.
And should the British Army, should the British soldiers be commemorated?
In England, yes. Country would recognise, like the French don't celebrate, the Germans.
So. Say there, Paul, and Paul's books are widely read, but the most recent one I've read is on the Army Ranger Wing. It's brilliant. Anne O'Farrell, Anne.
Good afternoon,
Kevin
Joe.
Barry should be commemorated. But your grandmother was with a group of women who did what?
She was out shopping on the morning Kevin Barry was executed, and she was outside the gates of Mountjoy Jail and knelt and said the rosary for Kevin Barry.
Okay. And as you say, the baby that she was pregnant with?
Yes, she was pregnant, and the following year had a baby boy, and he was named Kevin for Kevin Barry, and his second name then was Truce, for the hopes that the truce would last.
Wow. And how did Kevin, young Kevin, your Kevin, do?
Tragically, Kevin was killed as a young baby. He was, I think, 3.5, 4 when he was killed.
Where?
He was knocked down on Berkeley Road on his way to the shops. And my understanding, because all this information was anecdotal, he was with Padder Carney, I think his grandson, on his way to the shop.
Padder Carney wrote the national anthem, connection, Brendan Behan family connection. Berkeley Road near Mountjoy Prison, near the Mater Hospital. And what he was going to the shops, the poor child.
He was on his way to the shops, and when he was killed, the sixpence that he had in his hand, my grandfather took and had it dipped in gold and engraved, and he wore it on his pocket watch until he died in 1969.
Wow.
Then that passed to my mother.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, after it came to me when my mother died, and we kept it safe, but we were broken into last year, and it was taken. It had no value, only
sentimental
value.
And what was what was engraved on the sixpence that was stolen from
you? Engraved on it was, in memory of Kevin Truth Long, killed, and then the date that he was killed.
And that was robbed last year from your house and never seen again. Okay, Anne O'Farrell, thanks indeed, and to all our other callers. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Richie Byrne was the researcher. Maeve Mooney, DiBiCio. Padder Carney, there's the name again. But this, our Padder didn't write the national anthem, though we can sing it on a good night when the group of lads are out together back in the old days. And today's producer was the series producer, Rebecca Meehan.